One of the strangest stories in the Chumash is the story of Bilam. Moav understands that they're in deep trouble. The Klal Yisrael is already beginning the conquest of Eretz Yisrael. They've already conquered parts and pieces, and Moav understands that they're next in line. Balak, the king of Moab, recognizing that he's in dire straits, sends a messenger to Bilam. Bilam is the Gentile prophet. Bilam has a koach, a power to curse or to bless, and Balak sends messengers to ask Bilam to curse the Jewish people. Bilam says, I can't do anything without Hashem's permission. I have to wait to see what Hashem says. That evening, Hashem says to Bilam, no go, don't do it. Bilam sends back the message, I'm sorry, I can't do it. They send back the messengers to Balak. Balak, the king of Moab, sends a second group of messengers to Bilam. Please, we're going to pay you any amount of money. Please do it. Please curse the Jewish nation. Again, Bilam says, I can't do anything until God tells me what to do. And that night, Hashem says to Bilam, go, but don't say anything other than that which I tell you to say. Bilam gets up in the morning, saddles his donkey, and begins a very peculiar sequence of events. As the donkey is riding, a malach elokim, an angel, comes in front of the donkey, and the donkey veers off the road. What does Bilam do? He takes a stick and beats the donkey. Get back on the road. The donkey continues on his way. A little while later, the malach again appears. This time, there are two walls. The donkey's forced against one of the walls and presses Bilam's leg into the wall. Again, Bilam beats the donkey. The donkey continues. A little while later, again, the malach appears. The donkey sees the angel. The donkey sits down because it realizes it can't go forward without dying. At which point, Bilam is furious. He again takes a stick and beats the donkey. At which point, the donkey begins speaking. Vayiftach Hashem es pi ha'ason. Hashem opened the mouth of the donkey, and the donkey said, why are you beating me? Why have you beat me three times? Why am I beating you? If I had a sword, I'd stab you. But why? I'm your loyal donkey. I've served you all these years. I don't care, but... Hashem opens Bilam's eyes, and Bilam then sees the angel. Rather peculiar, rather unusual, but Bilam doesn't exactly get the message. He continues on his course to curse the Klal Yisrael. Three times he attempts it. Three times Hashem foils his plan. Finally, he realizes that he won't succeed, and he turns to Balak, the king of Moab, and says, I can't do it, but I'm going to give you an etzah. If you want to win against these people, get God angry with them. Get them involved in iniquity, get them involved in sin, and you'll win. And then Bilam gave him advice. Let loose the Benos Moab, seduce the Jewish men, and maybe you'll have a shot at it. That's in fact what Moav did, and 24,000 men died in a magefa. In the end of it, Zimri, the head of a shevet, took a Midianite woman into the Jewish camp and began a rebellion, a civil rebellion, until Pinchas ended it. It was one of the lowest moments in our history. And that's the synopsis. But let's look at this a little bit more deeply. Bilam should never have been a Novi. The Rambam describes to us what a Navi is. A Navi is a man who spends years and years purifying himself, a man who leaves physicality, a man who separates himself from anything in this world and reaches such a lofty plane that he literally is ready to speak to Hashem. Not every man who reaches that level is allowed access to Hashem. Unique people, special people. Bilam was none of that. Bilam was a heathen. Bilam was a wicked individual, and Bilam did not deserve prophecy. Rashi explains, why is it that Bilam became a Novi? Because it was an imbalance. The Gentile nations could claim as follows. Listen, of course the Jews became the great nation. Of course they became the exalted people. They had Nevi'im. They had prophets to show them the way. Had we had Nevi'im, had we had leaders and guides like that, we also would have been great. Hashem says, fine, let's test that out. I'll give you Nevi'im, I'll give you prophets, let's see what they do for you. And in fact, what did Bilam do for them? He brought them to a lower level. But here's the point. Bilam was gifted to see God. Bilam was gifted to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, something that Tanoim didn't get. But not only that, he was given a power. He was given a koach of dibur. His words were potent. His brachas, his klolas were so effective that kaviyachol Hashem had to stop him. 3 times Hashem had to stop Bilam, because what Bilam was going to do was annihilate the Jewish people. He was given a koach dibur, he was given a strength of cursing that could have spelled the end of the Am HaNifchar. And I want you to appreciate what's going on here. The messengers come to Bilam and say, we want you to curse the Jews because we want to stay in our land. Bilam didn't ask Hashem for permission to curse the Jews so that Balak could remain where he was king. Bilam asked Hashem permission to annihilate the Jewish people, kill them, man, woman, and child. And that's what Bilam set out to do. He asked Hashem permission, please, you know, there's this little nation, I hope you don't mind if I sort of kill them. Yeah, you don't really mind, do you? And needless to say, there was charon af, Hashem was furious. But watch the next step. Bilam gets up in the morning, and Bilam saddles his own donkey. And Rashi makes the observation, Bilam was a very wealthy individual, very important. It's inappropriate for a man of his stature to saddle his own donkey. Why did he do it? Because sinna is mekalkeles es hashura. Hatred blinds a man. He was so filled with hate for the Klal Yisrael, so filled with hate for his people, that he got up early in the morning and saddled his own donkey. Let's go! Maybe I can succeed. Maybe I can kill them. It's hard to imagine a more wicked individual. But things get even more curious when we look at what happened to Bilam along the way. Who's this malach? Why does an angel come and stop this donkey? So Rashi explains to us, it was a malach rachamim. Hashem had rachmanis. Hashem didn't want Bilam to do this. Why? You're not going to succeed in cursing the Klal Yisrael. That part's a given. But there's a terrible thing that might happen. Bilam, you're going to destroy your neshama. You're not going to succeed in killing the Jews, but you're going to succeed in going on that path, and you're going to destroy yourself. And Hashem sent a malach rachamim, an angel of mercy, to stop Bilam. 3 times that angel stopped the donkey, and it wasn't enough. Bilam didn't get the message. And finally, vayiftach Hashem es pia asun, Hashem opened up the donkey's mouth. The Sforno explains why. Because maybe he'll do tshuva. Hashem did a shinui hateva, a nes, an overt miracle, because maybe Bilam will do tshuva. And then the Sforno says an even more peculiar expression, because Hashem says, what a shame that we should lose such a chashuv man. To lose such an important individual would be a terrible tragedy. And therefore Hashem said, I'm going to make a nes, I'm going to let the donkey speak. And here's the question. We're not dealing with a great man. We're not dealing with chashuvei am. We're dealing with a Russia, a wicked individual who set his course to kill the Jews. We're dealing with an Adolf Hitler. We're dealing with an Ahmadinejad. We're dealing with a man who wants nothing more than to destroy Hashem's beloved. How's it possible for such a person to do tshuva? But even more, why would Hashem care? And not only why does Hashem care, Hashem sends a malach rachamim and then does a nace, makes his donkey talk. Oh, maybe because maybe Bilam will do tshuva. It sounds rather peculiar. It sounds rather difficult to understand. And I'd like to see if we could better understand what, in fact, the Sforno is telling us. And to do that, I'd like to share with you some observations. When Hashem created the world, Hashem created immutable forces of nature. Heat tends to rise. Gases tend to expand. Heavy objects tend to fall. Those are universal laws that operate through every part of the physical world. Rahman al-Tzlan, it shouldn't happen, but if you leave a baby unattended on a changing table, the baby may fall and get very badly hurt. You don't call gravity kind, you don't call gravity cruel. Gravity is a reality. One of the forces that Hashem put into the world is gravity, neither kind nor cruel, but a metzius. As Hashem created physical laws, so too Hashem created spiritual laws. And one of the laws by which Hashem created the world is something called din. Din means justice. Din means accountability. Din means you are responsible for what you did. If you did X and Y resulted, It's through your hands that it came about. You are liable, you are accountable, you're responsible for what you've done. If it could be, Hashem thought to create the world with the Midas HaDin. Why? Because Din is just, Din is appropriate, Din is proper. However, the world would not last very long. And I'll explain to you why. Imagine the following. Imagine a mortal, flesh and blood king said, don't do, whatever it may be. You're standing in front of Caesar, and Caesar says, don't do, and you say, I don't know, I don't understand that one. I don't really particularly like that commandment. I'm not really in the mood, and you do whatever. What will be your fate? Not a very good ending. It will end very quickly, but not very prettily. It will be finished. No discussion, no trial, no deliberation. Your history. You don't stand in front of a king and disobey a direct command. Hashem created the world for our good. Hashem put you on the planet to benefit you. And Hashem gave every one of us mitzvahs. Hashem gave us commandments for our good. Every one of the mitzvahs serve us, allow us to grow, help us enjoy this world to a greater extent, and certainly the world to come. Every avera, every sin is the opposite. Every sin damages me, damages the world, and is very, very foolish. And one more step. Hashem is present in every particle of physicality. Hashem keeps, maintains, and sustains every part of the physical world. There's nothing in this world that can exist without Hashem constantly keeping it where it is. And what that means in plain, simple language is that Hashem is throughout the 13 billion light years of the cosmos, but more relevantly, Hashem is present right here. So let's do the math. The King of Kings, the creator of the heavens and the earth, told me for my good not to do something. He created me strictly to do good for me. And he gave me mitzvahs for my benefit, averas to protect me. And while I'm standing right in front of him, I say, nah, I don't really care. And I do what I want. Din would demand instant death for any avera. Any slight transgression would be punishably instantly with one punishment called death. Explains the Mesillat Yesharim, that is why Din cannot be in total operation. If Din were totally enforced, no human being would do too well. Sarah Imenu didn't do so well. Sarah Imenu said to Avram, let us go in front of Hashem for a Din Torah. Hagar had acted inappropriately. Sarah felt that Avram didn't stand up properly for her honor, and Sarah had a taina against Avram. And Sarah said, let us go in front of Hashem for a Din Torah. Because she said the word Din, because she demanded Din, she was judged with Din, and the Medrash tells us that she lost 28 years of her life. Because as great as she was, as pious as she was, as almost perfect as she was, any human being judged with extreme Din would be history. I like to joke about the caterers not being very happy in a world of Din. The bar mitzvah celebration would end. You see, Shmuel would get his up to lane, and he would lane beautifully. The aunts and the uncles would be so proud. But then Shmuel would say something, whether it be Lashon Hara, whether it be a snide remark or something to his parents, and it would be over. The caterers would have to make sort of dual affairs, bar mitzvah funeral celebrations. The world could never exist with Din because Din is way too demanding and way too exacting. And therefore, while it's just, while it's proper, while it's appropriate, Hashem did not create the world with Midas HaDin. Hashem introduced another Midah called Midas HaRachamim. Rachamim means mercy. Rachamim means there are other factors that you have to take into account. Who is he? Where is he coming from? What does it mean to him? What is the situation? There are many, many other issues that come into way. But you see, here's the point. The world has Din, and the world has Rachamim. Without Din, there's no purpose in the world because there's no reward. If there's no justice, what you do for the good, you can't be rewarded for. So there has to be Din, but there also has to be Rachamim. Because if there's no mercy, it's over. And therefore, if it could be, when Hashem created the world, Hashem created both Din and Rachamim. and there's a balance. There's a sort of sliding scale. If Rachamim is on this side and Din is on this side, there's a sliding scale that moves over. During different times of the year, there's more Din. Different times of the year, there's more Rachamim in operation. Different things that you do can move the sliding scale across. And this concept is fundamental to understanding life. I'll share with you what I mean. Here's an interesting question. We daven. Why do we daven? If I daven for my needs, I understand how it might benefit me. After all, my acknowledging Hashem's presence, my coming to recognition that Hashem is the one who runs the world, my understanding that I am dependent on Hashem changes me. Through that process, I become a different person. I might not have been worthy for what I request when I began, but through the process of tefillah, I change, I grow, and now I'm worthy. So I understand how davening, praying for yourself, works. But explain to me the following. Rahman San, a young woman, comes down with leukemia, and the Kehillah gathers together 200 people, 300 people, crying bitter tears, saying Tehillim, a beautiful outpouring. But here's the question. The woman is in a coma. She doesn't hear your prayers. She doesn't even know about it. What good does your tefillahs do? When you understand this system, you understand the answer to that. You see, in the balance between din and rachamim, if the scale is somewhere over here, let's say 60% din, what a tefillah can do is move it over. When a tzibur gets together and says, Hashem, please have rachmanis, please have mercy, it can move the sliding scale over, and now more rachamim is introduced into the equation. The woman doesn't change, what she did doesn't change, the system of judging her changes, and that changes everything. With din, she might have been decreed to death. With more mercy, there's more forgiveness, there's more understanding. You move it over, and it might be that she now lives. But this is the point. There's din and there's rachamim. Both are in existence, and both are there throughout the year. One more step. I get a chance to speak in different communities, and sometimes I get reactions that are interesting. I was speaking in one community, and I was finished. A young man came over to me, and he was distraught. But I'll explain to you why he was distraught. This was a shir in Emunah, and we spoke about some of the basics of Emunah. The third yesod of Emunah, I claim, is that a person has to understand that Hashem knows my thoughts, that Hashem peers into the essence of me, and Hashem reads through me like a book. In davening, we say the words Hashem Sfasai Siftach. We ask Hashem to open our lips. It's not for Hashem that we have to speak. It's for us. Hashem reads my heart. Hashem knows my thoughts. Hashem reads through me like a book. Hashem knows my past, knows my future, knows exactly what I'm thinking as I'm thinking it. I went on at length on this topic, and this person came over after and was distraught. He said, this is terrible. That's horrible. I'm so exposed. I can't deal with it that Hashem knows what I'm thinking as I'm thinking. I can't go on. And he was very troubled by it. So I explained to him as follows. I believe the reason why you're troubled by Hashem knowing your thoughts is because you're anthropomorphic. You're taking human emotions, human thought processes, and placing them on Hashem. And you have to understand that Hashem is not human. And I said, let's start from the very beginning. Let me ask you a question. Before you were created, what did you do that made it worthy for you to be created? Right? Before you were created, what great thing did you do that Hashem says, that person I'm going to create? Well, the answer is nothing, because before you were created, you weren't created. But you see, that's the point. Hashem didn't create you for anything that you did. Hashem doesn't need you. Hashem doesn't benefit from you. Hashem created you for one reason, because Hashem is the mativ. Hashem is the benefactor. Hashem wants to give. Hashem wants to share. Hashem created you strictly for your benefit, for your good, because Hashem has loving kindness and wants to share of His good with His creations. Not because of anything you did, not because of anything you could have done. That's step one. But there's another step. Step two, what could you do to make God angry? What evil, heinous act can you do that will get Hashem really furious? The answer is nothing. You see, anger is a lack of control. Anger means a lack of power. Hashem doesn't lack power. Hashem doesn't lack control. Hashem is kol yachol. If Hashem ever got angry in theory, Hashem wouldn't bring some nuclear holocaust to the world. Hashem maintains every particle of physicality. If Hashem were ever angry, Hashem would just no longer maintain that and it would cease to be. But you see, the whole point is fundamentally flawed because Hashem can't get angry. Anger is a human emotion. Anger is a frustration based on limitations. Hashem is limitless, boundless. Hashem is beyond time, beyond physicality, and certainly beyond human understanding. And that is the problem. How does the infinite allow himself to be perceived by the finite mortal human? How do we have a relationship with Hashem who's so beyond our understanding, so beyond our conception, that we can't relate to him? And for that reason, Chazal tells us that Hashem acts with midos. Hashem acts with character traits. Hashem dons certain behaviors, if it could be, so that we could relate to Hashem. When we read in the Chumash, Charon af, Vayichar af Hashem, Hashem became furious, Hashem became angry. Don't ever make the mistake to think that Hashem was angry or Hashem was furious. That's an illusion. It's a way of illustrating. Hashem acts with that midah, with that character trait, so that we can relate to Hashem in some manner, in some way. But there's nothing that you could ever do to get Hashem angry, because, sorry to be the one to tell you this, you're just not important enough. You're not important enough to really get God angry. But there's one more step. How much patience does Hashem have? Right? I taught high school for a good number of years. It takes a lot of patience. It takes a lot of patience to teach high school guys. So if I have a lot of patience, then I imagine God has a lot of patience. I mean, like a lot of patience, right? No. God doesn't have yes patience or no patience. That's a mortal, physical concept. Hashem is infinite patience, but it's not even patience because there's nothing that frustrates Hashem, nothing that gets Hashem angry. There's no limit to Hashem's tolerance because those concepts are human terms. And what I tried to explain to this person was that you have to stop taking human understanding and applying it to God. And when you stop doing it, you can begin to relate to Hashem in a totally different magnitude, a totally different order, and you can begin understanding your relationship with Hashem on a much deeper level. And my friends, I believe that's the answer to Bilam. We look at Bilam and say, Goy, Russia, evil! But that's not the way Hashem looks at him. The way Hashem looked at him, Kaviyachal, is, Oy, Bilam, my Bilam, you're going to destroy your neshama. You're going to ruin it. You see, he didn't sin yet. He didn't yet do it. He was still pure. And Hashem Kaviyachal from 35,000 feet looks down and says, Bilam, look what you're going to do. Please don't do it. Please. I'll bring a malach. I'll change nature. Something we can't, Bilam, you can't do it. And if you want to understand the patience of Hashem, the tolerance of Hashem, the man is going to annihilate Hashem's chosen nation. He's going to kill the Am HaNifchar. He's not going for a walk in the park on a sunny day. He's an evil, heinous Russia. But that's our version. Hashem doesn't view it that way. Is there a time for din? Oh yeah, there's a time for din. But not when the person's still in this world. Hashem showed Moshe Rabbeinu the very last day of his life. Hashem showed Moshe a tour. First he showed him Eretz Yisrael. Then he showed him the future generations, the scholars, the saints, the sinners. And then Hashem took Moshe Rabbeinu to Gehenim. Vayicharid Moshe. Moshe was trembling. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, what is this place? And Hashem explained, this is the place of din. This is where the payback for those who violate the Ratzon Hashem. Who sent there? Rishayim, people who don't listen to the mitzvahs. Vayicharid Moshe. Moshe became more filled with fear and Hashem had to calm him down. Folks, here's the question. Did Moshe Rabbeinu understand who he was? Moshe Rabbeinu spoke peh el peh. literally, like I speak to you, he spoke to Hashem. He was on the loftiest, highest imaginable level. He was a tzaddik gomer. He knew very well that he wasn't going to Gehenim. His fear wasn't that he's going to be put there. Do you know what he was experiencing? Charon af. When you experience din, when you see the magnitude, the exactness of it, when you see how evil it is, in one moment you're filled with fear. You know why? Because we don't perceive it. We live in a world of rachamim. We live in a world where, okay, it slipped, it didn't matter, it's okay, I'm okay, you're okay. But at that moment in time, din is in operation, exacting, demanding din. The violation of chutzpah, you stood in front of the melech, malchei, amlochim, and you said, I don't care. Again and again, you violated Hashem's will. Again and again, you debased and defiled Hashem's holy name. There's a fury, there's an af, there's a chema that's so frightening that Moshe Rabbeinu was scared of it. Because there is a time of din. The world we live in, Baruch Hashem, operates with a lot of rachamim, an awful lot of mercy. But there is a time when it ends, and a time when din is in effect. When we leave this earth, we stand in front of Hashem, and it's cheshbon time, it's payback time. The books are taken out, and it's a very different system of din. However, right now, as long as we're alive, and as long as there's blood in my veins and breath in my lungs, I can depend on the system of rachamim. And this Sofarno is explaining to us how far rachamim goes. And the basic concept that a Jew has to very clearly know is that Hashem loves me, that Hashem created me to succeed, and Hashem wants me to succeed, and Hashem only wants what's good for me. But more than that, as much as I'm concerned for my good, Hashem is more concerned. As much as I want good things for me, Hashem wants them even more. As much as I love me, Hashem loves me more than I love me. And this concept is fundamental to understanding our relationship with Hashem. If you take the most magnanimous, generous, kindly person you could ever imagine, and take a person whose heart overflows with love and kindness, that's not one ten thousandth of the love that Hashem feels, love that Hashem feels for every one of his creations. And that's a concept that we need to understand. And that's a concept that we can see from Hashem taking care of this Goy Russia, this wicked, evil person, and saying, Oy, my Bilam, please don't ruin your neshama. You haven't done it yet. Please, stop. But I think there's another lesson to learn from Bilam. Listen to what the Sforno says. And Hashem says, for a chashuv person like him, what a shame to lose a man like Bilam. Okay. In the Geras Ramban, the Ramban tells us that when Hashem gives money to a man, you should treat that man with honor. Why? Because if Hashem gave him riches, Hashem wants him to be treated with kavod, and that's how you should act towards that man. Here's the question. Here's Bill Gates, and here's you. In Hashem's eyes, are you as important as Bill Gates? I mean, obviously Bill Gates has lots of money. Obviously, Hashem wants Bill Gates to be treated with lots of honor. The question is, Bill Gates is very, very important. Are you as important as Bill Gates in Hashem's eyes? And I'd like to share with you that the answer is no, you are not. You are not as important as Bill Gates. Because Bill Gates is a Gentile. Bill Gates is one of the many, many nations that occupy this planet. You are a Jew. The Am HaNivcha, the chosen nation, Hashem's beloved, Bonim Atem Lashem Elokecha, means you are children, unique relationship, different than any other occupant of the planet. When we say the words Avinu Malkenu, it means we have a unique relationship with Hashem that no other people shares. And what that means is you are not as important as Bill Gates, you are far more important. And here's the point. And what Hashem was saying to Bilam was something that we don't understand. Many, many times I've spoken about godless Adam, the greatness of a human, the human potential. There are many shmuzim that are dedicated to understanding the ability and potential of a human. I've mentioned this before, but it bears repeating. It's a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. The Mishnah tells us that by all rights, Hashem should have created the world differently. The world should have begun with 600,000 men gathered at Mount Sinai. Hashem begins history with the words, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. The Jewish nation were gathered, Hashem speaks. That should have been the first moment of history. But that's not the way history began. Hashem began the world with one man. And the Mishnah tells us there's a reason for it. Because we're supposed to understand an entire cosmos, the sun, the moon, the ocean, the rivers, all of it occupied by one man. And in our mind's eye, we're supposed to see the image of an entire world and one man, and we're supposed to do the calculation. Hashem created everything, wildlife, fauna, everything that my eye sees, Hashem created for one single man. Well, I too am a human. Says the Mishnah, Chayev Adam Lomar, a man's obligated to say, Bishvili Nivra Olam, Hashem would have created all of this, Shamayim Va'aretz, for me and me alone. Hashem created one man so that we should all see this, and we should know it. It wasn't enough to read about it in a book. It wasn't enough to write about it in a medrash. You had to see it with your own eyes. An entire world was occupied by one man, so we should all understand that Hashem would have created everything for me and me alone, because I too am an Adam. If we were to spend our entire life trying to understand our potential, our greatness, the godless of an Adam, I guarantee we wouldn't understand it. But you see, folks, what this Sfarna is explaining to us is that we don't understand it, but Hashem does. And you see, Hashem looks at a Bilam and says, Oy vey, your neshama, your most precious possession, the most beautiful thing I could ever give, you're going to destroy it. Do you know what potential it has? Do you know what greatness you could reach? We don't understand the greatness of a human, but Hashem does. And what that means in plain, simple language is that Hashem looks down on each one of us and waits for our growth, for our success. Hashem pines away, kavyochol v'kabi, Hashem waits, wow, when's he going to choose right? When is he going to make the right decision? When's he going to grow? Ah, good one. Oh, Baruch Hashem, good. That one, oh. And Hashem sits there day after day waiting for us to make the right decisions, waiting for us not to make more mistakes. And Hashem understands our greatness, understands our potential, and Hashem wants nothing more than for us to succeed. Yom Kippur is a unique day. Yom Kippur is a day when a Jew can perceive things that he can't perceive during the rest of the year. Yom Kippur is a day of introspection. One of the things that a Jew should be thinking about on Yom Kippur is the love that Hashem has for every one of his creations, kal v'chomer ben benosho, kal v'chomer for me. That means Hashem loves me, wants my best, wants my success, waits for me. The second concept that a person should think about is that while I may not perceive my potential, while I may not understand my inner greatness, Hashem does. And Hashem waits for greatness. Hashem did not create a single human being for mediocrity. Hashem didn't take a neshama from under the kisei kavod, put it into the world for whatever. You know, earn a living, do a mitzvah too, learn the daf yomi, kind of half asleep, half not asleep, you know. Hashem created every human being for greatness. And the chosen nation are supposed to be exalted, lofty, holy people. And I often wonder, what would happen if you or I had to stand in front of Hashem for din? What if today was a day? Body's put in the ground, neshama separates, and I stand in front of Hashem for din. What do you think it would look like? So I'm not going to deal with the averas. I'm not going to touch that. Let's not even go there. Let's deal with a much more basic question. How many people are confident to stand in front of God, the creator of the heavens and earth, and say these words, I lived up to 95% of my potential. I grew, I accomplished. I changed myself and changed the world that I lived in. I spent hours and hours, weeks and weeks, years and years dedicated to my accomplishments and growth. I understood my greatness. I understood your mission that you provided for me, and I did nothing but dedicate myself towards those goals. 95%, how many people would be comfortable saying 80%? How many people could stand up there and say 60%? I reached 60% of my greatness. I don't know many people who could confidently say that. And the people who do don't have a clue to their potential. And one of the things that's very worthy to think about on Yom Kippur is, am I the person that I want to be? Am I the person that I want my children to see? Am I the person that I want my grandchildren to look up to? Hopefully, you'll reach the understanding that there are things that you do that are very good, and you'll strengthen those. And hopefully, you'll also understand that there's a lot more that I could be accomplishing, a lot more that I could be striving for, a lot more that I could be reaching towards. And if you don't understand that, then you don't understand why Hashem created you, you don't understand the greatness that's within you, you don't understand your potential. But before you could really deal with that, you have to understand that Hashem waits, Hashem wants nothing but our betterment, Hashem wants us to grow, take one little step forward, and Hashem pushes from behind. That works for Averas in terms of Slicha Mechila, and it works even more on the positive. The Jew sits there in Shul on Yom Kippur and says, this is my plan. Hashem, help me. I want to grow. I want to change. I want to change in this area and that area, that area and that area. Please help me. That's a powerful, powerful tefillah. It can have a huge effect. But I do have one more step. The last time I stood at this pulpit, we were, I don't know how to say the word, commemorating what I call the 9/11 of our days. Nachman Hassan Leib Kletzky was murdered. And as a community, it was a horrific situation, and we had to deal with it. But while community-wide it was a big issue, it was as big an issue for the individual families. And each family had to deal with, how do you explain it to your children? We want our children to feel safe in our community. We want our children to recognize from Jews as their brothers. But on the other hand, living in times when you also have to alert your children to the dangers, to things that happen. So how do you walk that fine balance? And each family had to deal with it. Each set of parents had to sit down with their children and sort of figure out how to walk that fine line. My son Yoel is 7 years old. My wife and I had to sit down with him and deal with this issue. But when we did, we didn't quite know how much Yoel knew already or didn't know. So we sat him down and we asked him, Yoel, did you hear about that boy who was killed?
Yep.
Do you know much about it? Sure do. I wish I were there. If I were there, I would stand up to him. I'm brave, Abba. I would have stood up to him. And that's when we realized that Yoel didn't get it. Yoel is a kid. He's 7 years old. And seven-year-olds don't understand the gravity. They don't understand the severity. And they don't understand reality. The job of a parent is to protect him and keep him out of those situations. I sometimes feel that we are but children. If we had a videotape that played over some of the things that we say, if we had a videotape that played over the way we talk to our spouses, to our children, to our employees, to our friends, there'd be moments when our hair would stand on end. We open a mouth, we say things that are abusive and destructive, nasty, mean, hurtful words. And do you know in front of whom you say those words? In front of Hashem is one thing, but you're saying it to a person who is created in the image of God. You're saying those words to a beloved of Hashem. You're saying that to a human being for whom Hashem would have created the heavens and the earth. And when you open your mouth and you say those hurtful, damaging words, you're talking to a Tzelem Elokim. We don't realize it, we don't think about it. Whatever, I said words, I didn't mean it, or if I did mean it, I got over it quickly, and whatever, let's go on. But it doesn't go on. You said those words, you have to stop saying them, and you have to figure out how to undo the damage that you did do. And one of the things that a Jew should be doing on Yom Kippur is waking up. Waking up to the fact that whilst we have tremendous potential and we could reach the heights, that also demands accountability. And that also demands that we act as an exalted nation, as exalted human beings with dignity, with grace, as an honorable person, that our word is our word, that we conduct ourselves as those created in the image of Hashem. Yom Kippur is a good time to review your year, to think back, and to ask yourself, am I acting as one who is created in the image of Hashem? Am I acting as a representative of Hashem, as a son of Hashem? And it's very, very worthy to review your days, your weeks, your months, your relationships with those who you love, those who you work with those who you interact, and to ask yourself, is this what's expected of me? Is this what I should be doing? I think there's a tremendous lesson to learn from Bilam. Bilam was a Rasha. Bilam was a wicked man, but Hashem didn't lose patience. Hashem didn't get angry. Hashem sat there and said, Bilam, please Bilam, do you understand your potential? Do you know what you could be? And Hashem brought the malach. Then Hashem had the donkey open its mouth because Hashem wanted nothing more than Bilam's good. And understanding that Hashem loves us, that Hashem pines for our success, that Hashem wants us to grow and accomplish and be great, that would be the greatest nachas for Hashem. By the way, if you're really from, you know why you do things? You know why you do mitzvahs? Because I don't want to cause Hashem pain. Much like a child wants to do things to please his parent, I don't want Hashem to feel pain. Because if I mess up, Hashem's going to feel badly. You know why? Because Hashem loves me. Hashem wants me to succeed. And I can't do this because I'm causing Hashem pain. That's real frumkeit. That's when you're really, really pious. And even if we're not there, just understanding that Hashem waits. There's nothing that we could do to anger Hashem, really. Hashem acts with anger to help us grow, help us understand, and to recognize the opportunity called tshuva. Tshuva is an opportunity to eradicate, totally eliminate days, weeks of our life, and to take actions that we did and undo them. The Rambam tells us, if Hashem says Eidus, the man standing in front of me today is a different man than the one who did that act. If Hashem says, the same man who's standing here, put him back in that situation, never would do it again, that's a tshuva gemura, eradicates totally what was done, and it's as if it wasn't done. If you can't reach a total tshuva, any little bit of tshuva helps. Yom Kippur is a day that we could accomplish, we can grow, we could eradicate unbelievable amounts of damage that we've done and undo tremendous things. More than that, it's a day that we could perceive, we could understand, we could recognize Hashem's love, we could recognize our greatness, we could chart a different course, and we could end in a different way than we began. I'd like to close with one last observation. If you want to pick the one event in the Chumash that's probably the most comical, the most humorous, I think it's Bilam. Let's picture this. And Bilam gets on his donkey, and the donkey goes off the road. What does Bilam do? Beat the donkey. Okay, donkey goes back on the road. A little while later, the malach comes. What does the donkey do? The donkey pushes Bilam's leg into the wall. Bilam beats the donkey. Okay, a little while later, the malach comes again. The donkey sits down, and Bilam beats the donkey. What happens at that moment in time? The donkey opens its mouth and says, why have you beat me three times? Why have I beat you? If I had a sword, I'd stab you. I'd kill you. Yeah, but I'm your donkey. I've been loyal. I've been good. Why are you doing this? Why am I doing this? Can I kill you? Bilam, hello. It's your donkey. It's your behemoth. What are you having a conversation with a behemoth about? It's laughable. It's like when you read that story in Chumash, Bill, what a dope, what an idiot. Doesn't he get it? Donkeys don't talk? Doesn't he realize there's something going on? What a fool. What a fool. What a fool. What if I share with you that we are a lot like Bilam? I'll explain to you what I mean. You ever notice you set out on a course, you have a very clear version of what should be, and it doesn't go. It's almost like every one of your efforts are being thwarted. It's almost like Hashem's putting steel walls. I try this and it doesn't go, I try that and it doesn't go. And every time I try, Hashem is stopping me. Hashem, what's the deal? Are you angry at me? Are you furious at me? Hashem, why are you doing this to me? And we have tainas against Hashem. We're angry with Hashem. I need to marry this woman. I need to get that job. I need my kids to get into that class. That's what's good. That's what I need. And I've explained it to Hashem. I made it clear. I damned. I said, Hashem, don't you understand? Don't you realize it? And I don't get it. Hashem won't play along. Hashem doesn't get it. I don't understand. Hashem, are you angry? Do you have tainas against me? Why are you making my life so difficult? Why are you stopping me? And we act like Bilam. Climb up to 35,000 feet and look at the world from Hashem's perspective. Yingala, don't you understand? That's not for your good. I love you. I want you to grow. I want what's best for you. That course you set yourself on is not for your good. How many guys married the woman they needed and 6 months later they're divorced? How many guys got that job, the job I so needed, and they find out the whole industry is shipped over to India? How many guys got their child into that class, the best Rebbe, the best class, only to find out that there was the worst possible influence of another boy in that class that destroyed their child? So many times Hashem sits there and stops us, not because Hashem's mean, not because Hashem's cruel, but because Hashem understands that which we don't understand. It's when we play God. When we play God and we say, I know what I need. I need this, I need that, I need that. And I try to explain it to Hashem and he just doesn't get it. That's when we get into trouble. That's when we act like Bilam. And one of the things I think that's worthy to think about on Yom Kippur is, how many times during the course of my year, during the course of my life, did I get angry at Hashem for stopping me, for putting these roadblocks, for making my life so difficult, when it was clear and obvious that I needed this, and it just didn't work out, and that didn't work out, and what's the deal, Hashem? You're ruining my life. And we act like Bilam. We act like Bilam because Hashem sits there loving, kindly, wishing for our growth, wishing for our success. And we sit there bucking and bucking, fighting and fighting, not even realizing what we're doing. May Hashem grant us a Shnas Chaim, a Shnas Geula, a Tshuva Shlema. May we spend the next Yom Kippur Yerushalayim HaBnuya.